On YouTube Music, this song has more plays, almost double, than any other on A Kind of Magic. In 2014, Rolling Stone readers voted this their fifth favorite Queen song, behind only Somebody to Love, Don't Stop Me Now, Fat Bottom Girls, and Bohemian Rhapsody. And in 2018, this was listed at number 15 in the top 20 Queen songs of all time by Smooth Radio. It's amazing that this song was the fifth favorite Queen song, according to Rolling Stone readers in 2014, behind some of their absolute biggest hits. Because this song was not a big deal when Queen's 12th album was released in 1986. We're going to talk all about that and more. I've been waiting to get to this episode. I've been waiting to get to this song. Kicking off side two of album 12, A Kind of Magic. This is easily my favorite song on the album, A Kind of Magic. It's easily one of my favorite songs in their entire catalog. I think it's more evocative, it's more emotional. Certainly that frisson, goosebump-inducing effect I experience from many songs I'm absolutely in love with happens often in this number. And it's almost entirely because of the orchestrations included within the arrangement of this song. This is such a beautiful composition that goes beyond what we expect and the magnificence of Queen as we already know it. This is an amazing song. I was trying to think of some of the other goosebump moments I experienced with Queen. Obviously, Father to Son, my very favorite Queen song. The Beach Boys harmonies going into Freddie's fantastic vocal delivery there, that Take It Sonny, Hold It High. Brian's guitar riff that echoes that statement. And then we slip into the solo and that big grandiose rock out moment that lasts forever. One of my favorites. Dragon Attack, pretty much in its entirety, has many a fun moment. Gives me an incredible thrill when I listen to that one. But all in all, I don't think there are, don't get me wrong, I absolutely love Queen, love these boys, I love their work. But I don't often get that goosebump moment. It takes something really special to move me in that way. And what's interesting is, as much as I love 70s Queen and earlier Queen, the melodic movement of songs like this one and some we'll get later is what actually moves me to that moment of, oh, wow, the goosebumps and the euphoria. It's the later, more mature work that gets me moved like that. But for some reason, I enjoy earlier Queen more. So it's a bit of a, I'm a bit of a walking contradiction in that way, I suppose. But this song, track six, it's a rock ballad recorded in late 1985 at the Townhouse, most instruments and vocals recorded there, and Abbey Road, of course, famous Abbey Road, where the orchestra was recorded. This is a Brian May composition, one of his best, if not his best, dare I say it, I love me some Brian compositions. Father to Son, of course, but this one has so many moments that move us, that go beyond what we know as the brilliance of Queen. Dive number 134, Who Wants to Live Forever. I almost can't say it without singing it. It's one of those titles. I've listened to this song so many times in preparation for this dive, not just because I, honestly, picking it apart, you really have to be totally in it. I was listening to so many sections over and over again just to pick out every little element, every granular piece of sonic brilliance in this song. Oh my goodness, Brian. What an amazing thing. Who wants to live forever? Was a single September 15th of 86 in the UK. And guess what? It was also released in Germany, Holland, Italy, Spain, New Zealand, and the Netherlands. It charted at 24 in the UK. Genuinely surprised it didn't do better than that. Here's the thing. This was not released as a single in the US. Remember what I said about Rolling Stone voting this their fifth most favorite, Rolling Stone readers, sorry, voting this their fifth most favorite Queen song, period. That's without a single release of this song. This song simply, it glimmers and it shines brighter than so many others, despite the fact that in the US, it was never a single. And I strongly believe this was an incredible missed opportunity. Something about this song is timeless. Something about it resonates no matter where you are or who you are or when it is. And I think this would have been a marvelous, magical number as a single in the US. Would it have been played in its entirety? No. There are many cuts of this song. One of them is a more quote-unquote radio-friendly remix that omits the entire outro, which is so spectacular. We'll talk all about that. Only charted at 24. Cannot believe that. Can you? UK, you're sleeping on this. Oh my goodness. But let's dive into it. Here we go. 87 BPM. Very slow. A little bit of freedom there as well in the expression. Some pauses, hesitations that are very strategic. Time signature of 4/4 and two keys, E minor, G major. Who wants to live forever? So dramatic, so touching, so intense, this song. And yes, a little bit of Brian and Freddie. A wonderful vocal lead trade-off. We don't get this very often with any combination of our three singers in the band. We don't get that very often at all. But there are other versions we're going to talk about, which have a different lyric vocal arrangement. And what is Who Wants to Live Forever? What are we singing about? What is this? Love must die, or I love my style, which this is probably my most misheard lyric ever. And every time I mention that on the Queen Sub, it gets massive upvotes because I love my style. No, he's singing When Love Must Die. But the way the words are strewn together, it just sounds like I love my style. And it makes no sense in the context of the song, of course, but it's quite amusing. So I love my style. No. Love must die. Who wants to live forever? Because love must die. We're going to talk about the inspiration for this song and why that is such a heartfelt, resonating topic that every single one of us can relate to. Who wants to live forever? One of my very first Queen song loves. This was one of the songs that before I really discovered Queen and I knew all about them and I fell into the massive discography and I fell in love with them, this was one of the songs that jumped out at me as a brilliant composition, a grand and aching epic that transcends even the best of Queen. And the reason why, a full orchestra lifts and elevates this rock ballad into another realm altogether, making it one of Brian's finest creations. Beyond the loss of White Queen as it began and the aching love of Teo Toriate, let us cling together. Who wants to live forever soars, it yearns. A very sparse drum arrangement here with accents and fills from Roger pulses and holds the weight. But it's not percussion heavy at all. Not at all busy in that department. Very minimal. Warm, organ-like synthesizers create depth and darkness. The atmosphere lumbers slowly, our narrators lamenting and facing the heartache. The strings are another voice of distant, reflective longing. but it's Brian and Freddie's voices that together tell this story of no time, no way out, and an inevitable end. Brian's delivery is softer, sensitive. Freddie's more emotional and affecting. All three of our singing boys deliver dynamic vocal harmonies, especially in the last chorus, where we're swept into Love's Loss. It picks us up, it takes us, it carries us. This is the perfect blend of Queen's intensity and intention and cinematic sound, culminating into this goosebump, frisson-inducing moment that we want to relive, or I do. Though, of course, we can't live it forever. But we would if we could. Queen seldom reached pinnacles of this height. If anyone were to ever question Queen's musical validity and the impact of their gorgeous work, they need listen to no further than this masterpiece. I cry. I ache. It feels frisson at its finest. Every time I listen to this, it's no less affecting. It feels like the first time. And I know exactly what's coming. And I know exactly how these boys sing this. And I know where all of those gorgeous accents from the orchestra move through the choruses. But it doesn't matter. It affects me all the more, I think, because I know what's coming. This is a rare moment. I've talked about moments in creation of song and melody where it feels like someone was lifted even higher than their natural, innate abilities can already take them. Roger's Drowse. Let's veer away from Queen a little bit here. Neil Diamond, Solitary Man. I'm going to butcher the title of it. In fact, I can't even remember the title of this. It's from Rachmaninoff's Vespers. And it's like, what is the English, what's the English title of the song? Praise the Name of the Lord. I don't know. It was in, the first time I heard it was in my best friend's wedding towards the end, of course. And I don't want to give too much away. Of course, you've probably seen it. But when Kimmy's getting married, the song the choir sings, that's the song I'm talking about. You need to go listen to the whole thing. I'm sure it's on YouTube. Rachmaninoff Vespers. Just go look it up. Go find it. Really, the entire piece, every single composition in that whole piece is a masterpiece. But those moments in that song, and of course, they're singing about something godly anyway, but it just feels like it came from somewhere else. It does feel divinely inspired. I think I read a comment from someone who said, I was in that choir when we were in that church and we were recording that. And I can tell you something miraculous was happening there. And that's what it feels like when I listen to songs like this. Clair de Lune, Claude Debussy. That's another one. Yes, another much older one. Moments that we cannot explain, that seem to come out of something given to the creator. This feels on that level, who wants to live forever. And the great thing about it is it veers away just enough from our typical conventional song structures, but there is something incredibly familiar about it and melodic about it that makes it very accessible. It tugs at you, it pulls at you, it challenges you a little bit with the chords every once in a while, but it never feels too far beyond something we want to just fall into and fall in love with. Played 26 times live, almost entirely during the Magic Tour, and of course once in 1992 at the Freddie Mercury tribute concert, and it was performed by Seal. First, let's talk about the gorgeousness with Freddie and the boys, of course. I cry. Every time I watch it live and listen to it, I cry. That first verse gets me. It's so restrained, but there is so much happening in Freddie's voice. Hearing him sing it, stunning. Even in his sometimes broken voice, a crack here, maybe an uneven note there, he sounds somehow just as lovely as ever. I think the vulnerability in this song almost enhances that feeling of loss. So when he performs it that way, and he's not quite pristine in his vocal expression, it feels that much more. Brian plays synthesizer, introducing the song's chords, additional backing string synths, and how I wish they were real. Hearing John on his bass in this song gives it that extra Queen treatment on a stage, and hearing Roger's additional fills, rolls, the cymbal swells and the flourishes, the timpani mallets on the cymbals. Such a beautiful, crisp, and lively performance of this song. The boys harmonize perfectly in that last chorus. Brian transitions to his Red Special away from the synth at the solo, restrained in that lyrical beauty of his. Together, what else can I say? They can have forever when these boys play this song together. Wembley is lovely, but Budapest, another world, that one. Freddie sounds particularly pristine, controlled, dramatic, poised, expressive. That riff going into the solo is flawless. It's beautiful. And the last chorus, there's a piercing, soaring harmonic in the vocal somewhere. I was certain Roger was singing an octave higher, but perhaps it's just the layering of these boys' spectacular harmonies bringing out that harmonic. I don't know. I'll have to go back and watch it and listen to it again. I do want to talk about Seal's performance of this with the boys. Even though I don't usually do this, I don't usually ever talk about, you know, Adam Lambert with the guys or anybody else performing at the Freddie tribute concert, but what a special, unforgettable tribute, Seal's performance. Different key, no less passionate, and Seal, of course, with his own style and interpretation, really takes this into touching territory. I love Seal. I love his voice. This is the perfect song for him. Makes me think of Don't Cry, and of course, Kiss from a Rose. Watching the guys play as he sings, I cannot stop staring at Roger and Brian, how they're feeling this, how emotional this must have been. The pain, but the life, the loss, but the love, the memories. This is a beautiful thing, watching that performance. And Seal makes it his. He changes, well, maybe not just him, but we get a change at the end, which I think is very bright and needed. And Seal is so young here. He's so fresh and new coming into the music world at this point. We really get a glimpse of this brilliance that he would become later. There are so many songs from him that have an incredible amount of feeling and emotion. And you get that here when he sings Who Wants to Live Forever. Seriously, just go watch it. You will not be disappointed. And I can say that as much as I love this song and the original version and Brian and Freddie singing this, when we get Seal giving us everything through this, it's just marvelous. Some fun facts about Who Wants to Live Forever, my favorite song on A Kind of Magic. And I want to give a special shout out to queensongs.info, where I found quite a bit of information regarding this song's recording. And actually, I've gone back to that website many times to get some of the best, coolest information for you guys. So thank you, queensongs.info. This was Queen's fourth song in Highlander. In orchestral whispers, teases, and it finally appears in its full glory later with a different, more soaring vocal from Freddie. Wow. And only Freddie. He is the only singer when we watch the film. In this song, he's the only singer. We don't get any Brian. And it appears again in a striking, intense string arrangement. And I wish we'd heard something more like this in the album version. There are snippets of different versions like that later arrangement we hear in the film that I wish I could snatch it, and just plop it right in the middle of the album version. Nonetheless, incredible just as they are. And this single included Killer Queen as the B-side. It's a little interesting fact for you. This song makes heavy use of appoggiaturas, which is an ornamental accent note that resolves at or toward the end of a phrase. So there's this hesitation. There's this lack of a resolution but it gets there. It just takes another breath. It takes a moment. This happens a lot in this song. And guess what? No John on the album. Absolutely no John here. The orchestra is conducted by Michael Kamen. And the orchestra took over double bass, despite John appearing to play in the video for the song. And some percussion was also played by the orchestra. Cymbal rolls, low bass drum. Though Raj still drove most percussion, including some programmed and a sparse but very heavily reverbed kit. Speaking of Roger, he was apparently drunk filming the video. It's still impressive. Filmed with the National Philharmonic Orchestra, 40 choir boys and 10,000 candles. Is that legit? I wonder if that's real. 10,000 candles. Michael Kamen, by the way, did you know he did scores for Lethal Weapon and Die Hard? He also worked with other rock bands like Metallica. The orchestra was recorded by Eric Tomlinson, who also recorded the orchestra for Flash Gordon. Small world, the music world. The keyboard played by Brian is thought to be, along with drum computer, the first piece of the song recorded. Its melody and the chords provide a very basic guide and structure for all the other instruments. Brian played his beloved Red Special with Vox AC30 amps. The backing choir in the big climactic chorus consists of a two-part harmony with every note recorded about three times by our boys for a total of six voices. If I'm honest, it sounds like a lot more than six, but that's the beauty of the Queen sound. That's the beauty of their ability to blend and make incredible use of their voices and the way they came together. Like A Kind of Magic before it, this song's video was also released as the new concept video single. Brian sings the song's intro on the album, duetting as Freddie takes over the rest of the track. But in the film, yes, indeed, Freddie sings the entirety of the song. The song was used in the Highlander TV series several times. Live, Brian would play his Gibson Chet Atkins CE Electro Acoustic, but he's uncertain if he played this on the record. There is a gorgeous piano version of this available on the original US-UK CD release, the Hollywood Records release, and the Highlander promo. And in that piano version, Brian plays it. Fun fact. Of course I knew Brian plays piano. In fact, he plays it much more technically correct and more classically inspired than Freddie ever did. But it never occurred to me that Brian is actually playing this piano version. There's a little bit of synth thrown in for some warmth, but primarily it's just piano. And hearing that now, knowing that he played it, I still can't believe it never dawned on me. Just another experience. Brian's touch on his guitar is very apparent when he plays piano. If you listen to that version called Forever, it is stunning just how beautiful it is and how much it is Brian. Kicking myself, not knowing that was him up until very recently. There's a demo version with Brian's daughter singing. Very cute. If a little creepy to some people, some of the comments say, why is a young child singing this? It was Brian's daughter singing it. And a charity version of the song was recorded by young vocalists Ian Meeson and Belinda Gillette, released in 1989 for British Bone Marrow Donor Appeal. Really beautifully done, that one. Go look it up. There's a version called Skip's Demo. There's actually several of these. From a mini disc, a very rough sounding piano and synth bass cut with some incomplete chords. But the framework is there. This is that early version we talked about where all of the chords are dialed in. Even the outro with its very intricate minor chord progressions is there. Impressive. Basically the equivalent of a heavy pixelated graphic, that initial Skip's demo, those versions. It feels very rough, but it's still entirely realized already. The 5.1 surround sound version, for some reason, loses something for me. The depth of the synths is lost. The distinction between instruments and voices dampens. It's not nearly as dynamic. When I listen to that version, and I don't know if it's just because I wasn't getting the full effect listening to that particular digital recording of it. But I was very careful to find a 5.1 surround recording of it. And I gotta say, I wasn't very impressed. I remember when those discs were all the rage. It was when I was working at Circuit City, way back around 2001, 2002. There were a ton of discs, a ton of albums being released in a new surround sound setup. And I actually snuck some listens to some of those on our little listening machine. I actually listened to, and I couldn't tell you who it was or what it was now, but I was listening to songs that I knew very well. And I wasn't that impressed with them. It's almost like mini discs. Those had a big moment for a brief time, and then they just disappeared. So yeah, if you're going to listen to another version of Who Wants to Live Forever, the 5.1 surround version, I don't know. Not digging it as much. I do have band critique, and I think this is exclusively from Brian and Roger. I don't think I have any Freddie here or John, but I have comments from both Brian and Roger. Let's dive in. Let's start with Raj from 2003 Greatest Video Hits 2 commentary. Quote, I got quite drunk doing this music video. I couldn't remember my bits. I must have been drunk because I'm dressed appallingly in some denim outfit. I must have fallen into a vat of bleach. This was a long, boring shoot, and it's all terribly serious, unquote. Brian elaborated, quote, to my mind, I don't think the video does that much for the song, but it's nice to see Freddie very formal, unquote. And Brian again on his official website in August of 2008, the song was born in a car as my manager drove me back home from viewing the rushes of Highlander, including the sequence in which Connor McLeod falls in love with his Bonnie Heather, is warned that it will lead to misery, but does not listen. I saw her die in his arms and him carrying her body up the hill. At the time, my dad was dying of cancer and my marriage was breaking up. After about 5 minutes, the song was almost complete in my mind, unquote. 5 minutes. 5 minutes. On Queen Absolute Greatest in 2009, commentary from Brian and Roger. Let's go through Roger first. Quote, I think this is one of the best songs Brian ever wrote. And again, inspired by the movie Highlander. I think the sequence of the movie with the music is one of the scenes that lifts the movie from out of the, not ordinary, it was never ordinary. It's a good movie. It's just a, it's a very special theme. Music blending perfectly with what's happening on the camera and very moving, unquote. Brian continued, quote, it's funny. It was uncanny because I went away and wrote the song and obviously didn't see the rushes for ages again afterwards. Put it down very roughly with a keyboard, but the form of it, when we played it back with the movie, when we eventually got it on video, it just fitted exactly. So luckily they didn't recut anything. And all the mood changes worked like magic, and you can't predict that that would happen. It wasn't done to the picture. And I still see it and can't believe the way it fits, unquote. And if you're a little confused, what he's referring to and what Roger referred to as well is the music's rhythm with the scenes you're watching. Usually, a film music, they're edited around each other to perfectly coincide and be in sync, as it were. You want that crescendo to be at that particular moment where they look in each other's eyes or somebody dies or something like that. So in this case, when Brian was writing this, he'd only seen the rushes once for the film. And he didn't see them again for a while, but he went back and he did this whole piece. And then when they took it, and they put it with the film, it just worked. Which tells me that in the back of his mind, Brian must have remembered what he'd seen. He had to have had some sort of memory of those scenes in his head. I have nothing to say when it comes to constructive criticism or my how dare they stuff. Nada, which I actually find insulting because there is no mention of this in any contemporary reviews. Nothing. When publications were writing about Queen's A Kind of Magic in 1986, nobody wrote about Who Wants to Live Forever. And that baffles me because this is such an incredible piece of work. This is art, this song. But there is praise, especially from now. Fans, even casual fans, as evidenced by Rolling Stone readers voting this their fifth favorite Queen song, they adore this. They enjoy it. They love it. And on the Queen sub on Reddit, a poll between this and Save Me saw this win by almost double. Beautiful, I think, is the word most often used. Epic, melodic, passionate, existential, bittersweet, atmospheric. Yes, I pulled all these words from different things people have said over the years about this. Ethereal, hymn, love, death, anthemic. All descriptors that capture the song's atmosphere well. Though the common misconceptions that Freddie wrote this and or it was about his AIDS diagnosis, those continue to linger. And I suppose I get it. This song was actually used in the film Bohemian Rhapsody. I think it was, right? Am I not remembering that right now? I believe it was played in a very sad scene in that film. So I can understand why, especially fans, newer fans, might associate this with Freddie's diagnosis and then his death later. Especially given the fact that Freddie sings almost the entire song with such a passionate delivery. But is he ever not giving us a passionate, heartfelt delivery? Whether it's aggressive or tender, Freddie is always fully present in everything he gives us. Generally, retrospective reviews praise this as a work of art in Queen's catalog, but it doesn't get enough attention despite its beauty. I still don't know where the critics were when this album dropped in 1986. Everybody was sleeping on this song. Everybody was missing out on this perfection. A grand arpeggio opening, likely Yamaha DX7, a very Oregon-like quality to this synthesizer as it pulls us into the drama and the passion. And I'm going to tell you now, as we go through this, it's going to be very long. I'm going to talk about the chords a lot because we have a lot of stuff going on. But we have to talk about this because the magic is in the chords and these transitions. E minor, firmly entrenched. C, E minor. This sounds like some classical piece unfolding before us. It's not just the tone of this organ. It's the chords. And enter the orchestra. Dozens of string players, brass, winds, harpist, percussionist. We only hear the strings here first. The low tonic. There's no time for us. There's no place for us. Brian. The organ deepens the movement against his aching words. His tone hushed. Diminished, breaking under the weight of his reality. But let's talk about the chords. A minor, F sharp, E minor, D, C sharp, half diminished. A diminished triad with the minor seventh. This is a very rare chord, mostly reserved for classical and jazz, extremely suspenseful, unsure, regretful. And the strings build behind it. It resolves into major inverted chords. G starting on a D, A starting on an E. What is an inverted chord? So chords are all made up of, let's just talk about three-note chords, like a major triad. But when that chord is played starting on something other than the root note, that's when you call it inverted. There are a ton of those happening here. So anyway, we have G, D, A starting on the E. What is this thing that builds our dreams yet slips away from us? Ryan's tone is so distant. I love the hope in the first phrase. What is this thing that builds our dreams? And the brightness in the music there, the warmth. The strings follow Brian's vocal melody, adding a third on dreams. D sustained fourth, D, resolution. This kind of shift in chord creates a pause, a hesitation, that breath. wants to live forever. And essentially, he repeats this on the third harmony above. We hear the layers subtly building. The chords also expand and widen, opening the longing and the questioning. C, G starting on the B, A minor, 6th to the 5th, and then C, G major, 7th, yes, 7th chords, B, A minor, 7th. Listen to the bass and the lower strings. They sink down as Brian goes up. The violins, the violas, they rise with Brian, and accents appear as well as French horns. Counterpoint, those lingering notes at the end of the phrase, D7th, suspended 4 into the 3rd. Brian oohs softly, the strings quiet. Everything drops out except the organ. It holds on. Finally, let's go with just a smidge of reverb. That chorus, and it's only going to get better. That is what gives me so much emotion. I could talk about it all day. Easily one of Brian's and Queen's best, most evocative, touching moments in a song, the chorus here. And hearing Brian deliver the first chorus, it's very haunting, especially with his tone. A minute in and... There's no chance for us. It's all decided for us. Freddie, torn, brighter, clearer than Brian, stronger, but no less powerful and tender. Still a brokenness. I don't think I've loved his ballad delivery this much since You Take My Breath Away. The echo on his voice is mysterious. It's all-encompassing. Booming kick drum. The strings, those sweeping accents, half steps, thirds. And as much as I love the higher strings, the transition of the lower really pulls me in. This world has only one sweet moment set aside for us. The softly rising orchestra, those eighth notes against Freddie's sadness and acceptance. It's beautiful. It's almost like we're on an ocean. We're just drifting back and forth with those strings. An entirely unified expression from man and orchestra here. And when Freddie gives us the chorus, who wants to live forever? It's like he's going to break some of his absolute best work here. I'd swear he recorded singing along with the orchestra. It's just that refined, blended, and flawless. And the way he pulses forward and pulls it back. The strings, my goodness, it feels, it sounds sweeping. The strings are their own voice. There are simply too many fantastic transitions of notes and harmonies to highlight them all. Let's just say I listened to these sections over and over, unable to process the beauty I was hearing, as is the norm. And the cymbals and the rising of the strings in that crescendo. Ooh, as they play the melody, they rush up the scale, the brass. And then, of course, who dares to love forever? Freddie, everything culminates into the moment. The guitar appears, glissandos, the cymbals swell. Oh, when love must die. That ornament on guitar, da-na-na-na-na. The riding hi-hat, eighth notes, echo 16th note trickery here. The organ resonates, deep, heavily reverbed bass drum. A dramatic snare slaps. And Brian's lovely solo, it's not at all complex. It's not loud or fast or difficult. This is miles, just worlds away from something like Dead on Time in his solo. But it is longing, lingering on the third, soaring around it. The little ornament chiming in at the beginning of each phrase, E minor to C, over and over again. The strings push in slowly, subtle in their reverence, then more pertinent, intentional, heavier, urgent, as they too dance around the third. Brian crawls to the fifth. All the while, sparse percussion anchor us as we spin higher into emotion. There's a moment where it almost sounds like a plucked note on the higher tonic. Just as Brian begins swaying and leaning more into his solo, A slow tremolo rising into a heavier weighted sound. He falls onto that heavy chord. The snares roll. Touch my tears with your lips. Brian, so tender and longing, that 16th note string pattern implores. The bass drum and the snares, the cymbals strategic. Emphatic. Touch my world with your fingertips. The way Brian's guitar fades in and out throughout that phrase, panning from left to right and back again, surrounding us with emotion. Crash, fret noises, and we can have forever. Second, an alternate chorus here, the conviction, the adamance. G, D, F sharp, E minor. The strings carry the melody with Freddie. And we can love forever. Freddie reaches that fifth in power, and the strings push higher to the sixth and above. Brian on guitar, all of that dense emotion. Forever is our today. It's our today. A lot of people think it's ours today, but that's what's being sung. It's forever is our today. It's our moment. C, half diminished, A, starting on the C sharp, diminished, inverted, beautiful. And the phrase ends on B flat, D. This is a flatted third chord in the scale. It's brilliant. Creates a tension, an expectation for something grand and epic, and we get it. Who wants to live forever? Same chord progression starting on G, but the pattern is what we heard earlier in the first chorus. Only this time, all three boys are singing. Layers, the strings, the guitars, the harmonies. I could pick this apart, but it's all one huge passionate expression. Everything gels, everything lifts, implores. Brian's guitar is the only diversion. A bluesy lick in between phrases that gently pan. Forever is our today. Sustain, G minor seventh. But we're far from done. We could end right here, but we don't. The hi-hat shuffles, E minor. Who waits forever anyway? Brian. Haunting. A rise of high guitars one more time. A very subtle, distant ping of that. And the orchestra, accompanied by pulsing, pounding bass drums, descends in minor thirds. Very cinematic, spooky, intense, and cut from the radio version. Totally wrong. You cannot listen to this song and fully appreciate it without listening to these transitions. As we go into this outro, swelling brass, sneaking strings. There's an ambiguous atmospheric note or chord laying low in these chords somewhere, and it gives me goosebumps. It's almost like a rush of air. Cymbal swell, the organ appears again, as does the plucked guitar. Snare roll, E minor, B minor, C, starting on the E, C add sixth, E, crescendo. And the orchestra makes this moment. As we begin going out, the orchestra falls down in parallel thirds, all the while dominated by that E minor chord that carries us through at the base of it. It's gorgeous. Every section of the orchestra has a moment to shine. And the horns are just stunning and immaculate here. Boom, boom. D, massive synth organ arpeggio, E5. No third in that chord. Strings swell. What an amazing piece, Who Wants to Live Forever. Every time I listen to it, every time I talk about it, I feel like I really am listening to, talking about, experiencing this grand, epic, orchestral piece. And it just makes me wish they'd done this more often. Brian, I think, always had more than the others this affinity for something that was classically inspired. There are other moments sometimes with synth strings where we get this beautiful brilliance, but here there's another weight to this altogether because of the sheer size of this orchestra playing with these boys, and it is so incredibly powerful. I wish John was here. That's my only other thing, is I wish we had our bassist here somewhere. But yes, in the video, he does appear to play. And they all look so dapper and gorgeous. And then there's Roger in that denim. I love his comments. Oh boy, I must have been drunk. So funny. But the video, it's true, it doesn't really do it justice. I understand what Brian's saying, that the video doesn't highlight the song very well. It feels too obvious just to see the boys playing with an orchestra. Yes, it's dramatic and it's sweeping and Freddie's gorgeous in it. But this doesn't properly, I was going to say highlight, but that's not the right word. This just doesn't represent the emotion in the song well enough. We need something more. And I can't tell you and imagine right now what I want to see. I don't know that it would be fully appropriate to do a totally made up story for the song either, because it is meant to accompany the film Highlander. That's the whole purpose. Perhaps that's why the video from the boys seems so obvious. They're playing with the orchestra. It's just obvious. Come to think of it, they've done that several times with singles on this album. They did it with Friends Will Be Friends as well. They played on a stage. We didn't actually see them doing anything. It's not a scene. It's not a story. It's just them playing, and they're doing the same thing here, of course, with a massive orchestra, and it's gorgeous, and it's brilliant, and it's perfect, and you need to go listen to the song again. I need to go listen to it again. I was listening to it. I was singing along to it in the car just yesterday, and I can never stop. This is one of those that just keeps getting better every time I hear it. And I've loved it for years now, and it's never lost any of its potency in how it affects my emotions when I listen to it. This is definitely one of my top Queen numbers of all time. Easily in my top 10, more than likely. And certainly one of my favorites from Brian. Absolutely. And as Roger said, one of Brian's best compositions, period. Does have reminiscent moments, echoes of things from him much earlier, like White Queen as it began. Or Someday One Day. Brian and his folk, Brian and his classical, Brian and his, what did we call 39? Like a space opera folk. Much more acoustic, not as much rock and roll there, but still very much Queen. And this song is epic, grandiose, Queen, anthemic. I used to say anthematic. I don't know. I'm still going to say it because I love to, there's several words like that I use that are sort of made up, and that's one of them. Ah, I needed that water so badly. And we can have forever. What a beautiful song. And I'm telling you, those live versions, Budapest, Freddie sounds so pitch perfect through pretty much the entire thing. And hearing Roger and Brian harmonize, seeing John play, especially since we don't get him on the album, is such a brightening effect to see how they work together. Because this song on the album is stunning, very much with the orchestra in play, literally. So watching, listening to the boys play this together and only having a backing synthesizer carrying a lot of those orchestral chords, you get this feel for the song in a more classic Queen mode, and it gives it something extra. In a way, maybe it's just different, because alone on the album, this doesn't need anything else, save maybe a little John. It's perfect. Who wants to live forever? Go check it out. Go listen to every live version you can find. I'll try to link to some of those other, like the Skips demo version. Or I'm not going to link to the 5.1 surround sound. That was so lackluster to me. But I will definitely link to Budapest. I'll probably link to the Skips demo version if I can find it again. So you guys can hear the beginnings of the song that were very much like what we end up with, albeit just a simple, rougher arrangement of it. Everything is there. All of those minor chord progressions at the end are there in that outro. It really is impressive how Brian was able to piece this together. And what's great is there are mistakes on the Skips demo, but I love it because it just shows that it's unrefined. It's not polished. This is an idea. He's getting it down. He doesn't want it to get lost. This is where it all starts. And you're going to hear that. You're going to hear the emotion in it too. You can hear it even in the simplicity of that arrangement. It really is something to hear where songs begin and watch where they end up at the end and how they become this incredible piece that just, yes, I'm not even exaggerating when I say this transcends so many other Queen pieces and has a life all its own, clearly because even without a proper single release in the United States, this song has made an impact. And I wish people talked about it more because it's just not appreciated as much as it needs to be, in my opinion. I'm in love with the song. That's why it took me a little longer than I thought it would to finish my dive for this, my prep for this. I was fully prepared. Last time I did an episode, I was just about there. And then I started working on this again for this song. And I thought, wow, I'm nowhere near ready. So yes, it took me a little bit longer than it normally would, but I wanted to do it right. Who wants to live forever? Kick back and listen and enjoy. And guys, have a great rest of your day, your night, kicking off your morning, whatever you're doing. You got your coffee, you're kicking back with your drink at the end of the day, whatever it is you're doing. I hope you're having a great one and a bright one. And I'll be back next time. Keep yourselves alive.